Republican Caleb Rowden has his differences with party leaders, but that doesn't mean he's joining in angry criticisms or calls for investigations.
Frankly, I think there's a way to be in conflict with your own party and do it the right way.
Youth pastor, Christian recording artist, and state senator from Columbia, Caleb Rowden, this week on State House Blend, Missouri. From KCUR Studios, this is State House Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. Senator Caleb Rowden is with us today, but first, it's been a very full week in Jeff City, with the General Assembly close to doing the one thing it's required to do, pass a budget. Nearly $28 billion in expenditures have now made their way through the state Senate. With a vote on K-12 education funding, the Senate made some news. A coalition of 10 Republicans bucked their caucus leadership to join all 9 Senate Democrats in voting for $3,749,000,000 in school funding, just like the House did. And that means the state's foundation formula will be fully funded for the first time since that target was put into law in 2005. Now, budget's off to a conference committee. House and Senate negotiators will try to bring their different versions together, all with a deadline of May 5th, the end of the week, to get a final version to Governor Eric Greitens' desk. Some doubted we'd be anywhere near that deadline, though, a concern based mainly on the work of the Senate, where the gears of governing had almost ground to a halt at the start of this week. St. Joseph Senator Rob Schaff was using procedure to block policies he didn't like an expansion of Medicaid-funded managed care in the state, and to send a message to some of his fellow Republicans, including House and Senate leaders and Governor Greitens, that he didn't like their tactics. That led some, including our guest today, Caleb Rowden, to take to the floor to criticize Schaff. We'll hear more about that in a minute. Now, as the General Assembly heads into the last 2 weeks of the session, there's a lot left on the agenda. None of it's without controversy either. A bill allowing students to transfer from low-performing public schools to more successful ones. A prescription drug monitoring program that supporters say would fight the opioid epidemic in the state. A bill to make Missouri compliant with federal real ID laws. Without it, you won't be able to use your driver's license to get on a plane after this year. And, as is Missouri tradition, a host of bills that would limit abortion rights in the state, which have gained momentum after a federal judge's ruling this month opened the door for abortion services to be provided in several cities, including Kansas City, that are currently without. Some of the laws moving forward include limits on the use of fetal tissue and a bill allowing the attorney general, instead of local prosecutors, to enforce the state's abortion laws. Joining us now is Senator Caleb Rowden from Columbia, Republican. Senator Rowden, thanks for being here.
You bet. Thanks for the invite.
You have had quite a couple of weeks there in the Missouri Senate, huh?
It's been interesting. We're definitely earning our pay.
We are joined in the studio by KCUR's Kyle Palmer, our newscaster. Hello, Kyle.
Hi, good morning, Brian.
Glad you're here. Senator Rowden, let me just ask, I mean, with all that has gone on in the last couple of weeks, what seems to you like the biggest story?
Well, you know, I think there's been a lot of competing stories and interests over the last, it's kind of culminated over the last few weeks, but I think it's been bubbling up throughout the entirety of the session. I think probably the anticlimactic answer is that we passed a budget last week, which there had been some rumors and some thoughts that there was a group of individuals who wanted to keep that from happening, to get us outside of the constitutional window so that we'd have to go to a special session to pass the budget. Now, that did not end up happening, so we passed the budget relatively uneventfully on the Senate floor last week. So, I mean, I think even in the midst of some conflict between personalities and groups of Republicans or Republicans and Democrats and all that stuff going on, to still be able to do that and get that constitutional obligation done was certainly something that was good in my eyes and good for good governance in Missouri.
I want to ask you about the substance of the budget as well, but since you mentioned those personality conflicts, you were part of at least one of those personality conflicts. You late last week called out one of your colleagues, Senator Rob Schaff, suggested that his housing arrangement, where he rents a room from a registered lobbyist who might actually benefit from some of the bills he supported. You called that out on the Senate floor. Why'd you do that?
First of all, I have a great deal of respect for Senator Schaff. He's a good guy. He is an effective legislator, obviously has proven to do that, and has been elected a lot and reelected, and is going to serve out 16 years in the General Assembly. So that means that he's got a few fans back home. I think the thing that really rubbed me the wrong way was how Senator Schaaf was going about his business. It wasn't that he was obstructing bills necessarily, although I didn't agree with it, even how he did some of that. But that he had gotten into this habit of really calling other legislators corrupt for no other reason than they were on the opposite side of a bill than he was, or on the opposite side of a budget fight. And so, you know, he made some, I thought, some offensive comments to Scott Fitzpatrick, the House Budget Chairman, who's a good friend of mine. Speaker of the House, Todd Richardson, is a good friend of mine. Glenn Kolkmeyer from Odessa, who's a good friend of mine. All these guys I served with in the House. And so, you know, the point of my interaction with him last week was not that we should start calling more people corrupt. It was that we should stop throwing that word around. It was about, you know, the future of the Senate and how we want to operate. And is it going to be this obstructionist brand sort of, you know, hellhole, for lack of a better word, or can we come together, find opportunities to build relationships, build trust, and then when we get in these moments of conflict, that there's a foundation of trust and a foundation of kind of relational capital that we can build off of. That's the route that I'd rather go, and hopefully that's the route that, you know, most of my colleagues will choose to go in the future.
Have you had reconciliation of any kind with Senator Schaaf?
You know, we've had a couple of conversations afterward. We haven't really spoken specifically about the incident, but I certainly let him know that I look forward to continue to working with him. He's going to be there for another year. And so I have no problem, you know, on opportunities for us to work together to push things forward. You know, if we're going to be in conflict or we're going to be on opposite sides of an issue, to do that in a respectful, civil way, I look forward to that and have no problems, you know, moving forward in that fashion. But, you know, I think that's got to be how we operate. You can't take things. If you take things personally down there, you're going to end up really, really miserable. And so I think you have to, the relational element of what we do down there has to be the most important, because the reality of the Senate is that you can be on opposite sides and at bitter war on one issue, and you turn around and the next one you're on the same side and you're fighting really hard to get something done. So if every single issue is siloed and personal, you know, we're going to end up in a really rough spot. But I think if we can see the bigger picture, then I think we've got a chance to move forward in the right way.
Senator Rowden, this is Kyle Palmer. You know, you have been talking about relational politics in Jefferson City. I wonder, you know, you and several of your Republican colleagues have taken, I guess, what would amount to a stand against your own party's leadership, especially on the vote on education funding. And I wonder where that stands with you and your colleagues, and what the dynamics, the intra-party dynamics are currently after that vote.
Well, I mean, I think it's important to remember, one, that was one vote, and it was one that, you know, for me personally, that's a little bit less relational and a little bit more me representing my district, you know, because obviously being from Columbia, with a huge focus on public education here and in the surrounding areas that I represent as well, you know, that was a no-brainer vote that I'd take every day and twice on Sunday, regardless of who's for it or against it. So, you know, I think that's one issue. And I think there's a way, frankly, I think there's a way to be in conflict with your own party and do it the right way. I think that for me personally, and I can't speak to how everybody else sees this, but for me personally, you know, there are probably some really big-ticket issues that I'm going to fight and stand up for, because it's what my constituents would want. It's what my district would want. But I think there's a way to do that that is still respectful of, you know, what folks on the other side think. And so, again, kind of back to the point with Senator Schaaf, I don't believe I wouldn't make the accusation that the people in that particular context who voted against that amendment are anti-public education. I think those are the extremes that we jump to when we're trying to prove this political point. But if you put that in context of you know, it's pretty rare that a budget gets amended on the Senate floor. It has happened before, but it's pretty rare. And so that conversation specifically was as much about procedure as it was policy. And so, you know, I'm not going to take the stand that, well, you know, those guys, I'm anti-leadership now and those guys are against public education, because I frankly don't believe that to be true. So you have to put things in context, and we're not always very good at putting in things in context. Either we don't want to, or we do it and we don't care what the context tells us.
You know, we're talking a lot here about sort of differences between Republicans in the Senate. I don't want to harp on that too much, but I recognize that we're in a time when Republicans do control the governor's mansion, the House, the Senate, wide majorities in both houses of the General Assembly. I guess my question is, are we seeing here just sort of some a hiccup in the process of learning what that's going to look like for Republican leadership in Missouri? Or is there a real barrier here to getting things done, to a barrier to Republicans coming together to have kind of a common vision for what they want Missouri to be about? Do you feel like everyone's on the same page?
I would say a couple of things to that. One, I think there's going to be some growing pains. You know, there's a lot. Most of the people that came in that are serving in the House now have never served with the Republican governor. You know, there were some guys who served in the House that moved over to the Senate that served when Matt Blunt was the governor back between 2004 and 2008. But this is, for me personally and for a lot of my colleagues I came in with, this is the first time we've interacted with a Republican governor. So there's obviously going to be growing pains because we're not going to agree on everything, and we shouldn't. You know, if we're all 100% lockstep on every policy, then that probably means that some of us aren't representing our districts very well. And so I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, I think the other thing, too, you know, at the end of the day, it's okay for us to disagree. You know, it's okay for us to have some differences, and I don't think that that's a bad thing. How it plays out over the course of the next few years, I think, remains to be seen. But I think we're still early in the process, and I'd say, you know, all things considered, we've had a really, really, if we shut the door after we pass the budget fully next week, if we shut the doors and went home, it's the most successful session Republicans have had in a very, very long time. And so I think that's the other thing that's important to remember, is that we've done, as far as Republican priorities, there's a lot of things still on the table, but there's a lot of things that we've gotten done that I think our base and folks who elected us would be really, really proud of.
Before we leave the topic of Republican Party sort of differences in the legislature right now, I do want to ask you about Senate President Pro Tem Ron Richard. There have been growing calls this week for some kind of investigation over donations he received from David Humphreys, the Joplin businessman. One of your colleagues in the Senate, Senator Ryan Silvey, a Republican from Kansas City, has suggested that he does think some sort of investigation would be in order. Is Ryan Silvey all alone on this among Republicans, or do others have concerns as well?
Yeah, I mean, from my view, I think he's pretty much on an island. I think that you look at the full body of data as it relates to Senator Richard filing that bill in years past, before this donation in question was made. I think if you put it in context, I think the full body of data, for me personally, I just don't see anything there. I haven't really heard of any of my Republican colleagues anyway, who have any concern. I mean, obviously some of these guys have served with Ron for 15, 16 years. And know him to be a guy who works really, really hard and really has worked for a long time to put the best interest of the state in front of him. So, you know, I think Senator Silvey can make whatever, you know, statements he wants and whatever accusations. It's certainly not something I'm going to join him in.
Senator Rowden, I mean, it seems as if you don't hold anything to the substance of the allegations. I guess my question is, do you have any issue with the response that Senate Pro Tem Richard gave back in December, when he gave a rather crude response to a report? I know for people who don't know Senator Richard or know much about Missouri politics, that particular response where he told another lawmaker to kiss
I'm not sure the response was appropriate, but I don't think it makes the accusation any less warranted. And you have to know about Ron as well that, you know, there was a very covered similar response when it was being threatened that Rex Stingfield, a Republican donor, was going to come after him for not getting, I don't remember what the piece of legislation was, across the finish line, and Ron's response was, bring it on, big boy. And so I think he's had a similar style of response and interaction with Republicans and Democrats, which is just his personality. So, yeah, I don't think the response was appropriate, but I don't think that heightens the need for, you know, any sort of investigation.
A display of bipartisanship.
That's right.
Well, I appreciate that. Let me turn to some of those substantive issues. You said a moment ago that you know, it would be a successful session in Jeff City, even if all you did is pass the budget finally next week. But there actually are quite a few items still on the agenda. Among those, one is a court ruling that abortion access in Missouri has been unconstitutionally limited, and promises by Planned Parenthood to make abortion more available again in several Missouri cities. You have taken a pretty consistently anti-abortion position in General Assembly. What do you want to see happen in the next few months? Do you agree with the judge's decision? Do you support any of the bills that are being bandied about to take action in response to it?
Well, I mean, I think it's, first of all, I think it's abundantly clear, given the, you know, every poll that's ever been done in our state and the number of pro-life individuals who've been elected to the Missouri State Legislature, that we live in an overwhelmingly pro-life state. So I think the actions that we take, number one, I believe are the right thing to do, but two, I believe are politically what would be in line with the will of our constituency. So, you know, I think that obviously the courts have the ability and the prerogative to make rulings based on, you know, challenges that are before them. And if they make that ruling, then we can go back and take another look at it. You know, I think that you know, for me personally, anytime I can take a vote that's going to protect life, and that's something that I want to do. And I think that this ongoing back and forth between state legislatures and you know, state courts is going to be something that's going to probably go on for a long time. So I don't think it's going on anytime soon.
And is that a good thing? Is that the way we should be resolving this question?
You know, I think it's the way that the system was set up. You know, I think there's three branches of government for a reason, and so I think that in sometimes that those branches are in conflict. I mean, you've seen that not only between you know, the legislative branch and the judicial branch in this particular case, but between legislative and executive. And you know, I mean, we've seen that in Missouri, and so I don't think that. In and of itself is a bad thing. It manifests itself in a bunch of different ways with a bunch of different issue sets, you know, and some of them are probably more controversial than others. But this is that particular interaction is something that's been going on for decades. And it, you know, it is what it is on this issue, but it's happened on a bunch of other issues as well.
I had a couple of questions related to higher education, which I guess gets us back to the budget. But you've already said how much of a supporter you are of public education at the secondary, elementary and secondary level. And I wanted to go to higher ed. You've said in the past that you as someone who represents Columbia need to continue to shout and scream about the value of higher education in a legislative session that has, I think, challenged higher education funding. What do you see as the status of that? And do you fear that even once the budget is reconciled and given to Governor Greitens, that the University of Missouri will see more drastic cuts?
Well, I think there's a couple things at play here. One, there, you know, I think my goal this year, frankly, was to make sure that the University of Missouri was not treated differently than the other two-year and four-year institutions, which was initially what was proposed last year before myself and Senator Schaefer were able to get that resolved. So I don't think there's any scenario, specifically given the educational outcomes and the output that the University of Missouri has continued to display, why we should be treated differently because of some isolated incidents that may or may not have offended, you know, people. And frankly, we're not perfect. We made some really, really bad choices, and I've said that numerous times. But so that's one piece of it. You know, I think this year was never going to be good for higher education. I think, you know, the best that we were just scraping and clawing to get whatever we could get out of it. So my hope now
is that right now, when going into conference, there's a conferenceable difference between effectively a 6% cut and a 9% cut to every 4 and 2 year institution around the state. You know, it's my hope that we can get it closer to 6.
One final question about this higher ed issue for, you know, a story that just happened yesterday that hits close to home for our listeners here in Kansas City is the approval of $48 million in state matching funds for a downtown arts campus for the University mm-hmm. of Missouri, Kansas City. Governor Greitens has not said whether he's going to sign that yet, hasn't taken a position on it one way or the other. Do you foresee him possibly line-iteming that out, or that's going forward, and why was that given kind of a pass-through? What was the conversation in Jefferson City?
I haven't talked to him on what his intentions are with that. This was just a resolution basically just saying that over the course of the next 4 years, I guess 3 years now, that we're going to plan to appropriate this money into the budget. And so it doesn't have any impact on the budget that we're passing now. And so, you know, I think it's the right thing to do. We've toured some of that area and you know, kind of see the really unique opportunity that is there. And so I was excited, and in a moment of, you know, bipartisan coming together, I was excited to see that come to the floor. I was excited to see the support that was offered and see it pass. So, you know, hopefully the governor is supportive of it as well.
Other items still left on the agenda. One is a bill that you're carrying there in the Senate that's become known as Haley's Law. It's an expansion mm-hmm. of the Amber Alert system, passed almost unanimously in the House. What are its prospects in the Senate? Are you concerned about it getting hung up in a logjam here at the end of the session, or do you think that has a chance?
Yeah, I think it. You know, there's a couple bills that I'm handling in the Senate. That one and then the raising of the marriage age are two that I think have enough.
Remind us, the state currently requires...
It's 15, and we're raising it to 17, the design being that there are... Missouri is being exploited for, you know, potentially young women that are being held and being trafficked and those sorts of things. We've heard recorders of deeds talk about stories of, you know, a 45-year-old guy and a 15-year-old girl flying in and you know, trying to get married and then going back out. And, you know, we've heard some of these horror stories, and human trafficking and modern-day slavery has been something that has gained, you know, a lot of notoriety in Missouri as well through the legislature and the efforts of the Attorney General and others. So both of those things have enough. Both of those issues, I think, have enough bipartisan support, and really there is a, you know, really socially aware, compassionate element to both of those issues that I would hope that they wouldn't get caught up in a logjam. Now, you know, I don't know what you know, what folks have planned for the last 2 weeks as far as, you know, stopping some of these priorities, and so I think there's always a chance in the last 2 weeks that a lot of really, really good things end up getting stopped. But, you know, we're gonna push as hard as we can, because I think there's a great amount of value in both of those for the people of Missouri.
Another one that hasn't come through yet is Real ID. A lot of folks, when I'm out talking to people about what they know is going on in the Missouri General Assembly, this is one that comes up all the time. Will they be able to use their driver's licenses to get on an airplane after January? What do you think?
Well, I hope so. You know, I think there's a great amount of support. I think if it comes to a vote in the Senate, it will pass overwhelmingly. I think the opposition has been is relatively narrow and relatively shallow. But you know, I think I agree with you. It's an issue that I've heard. I've you know, very staunch conservative friends of mine, family members, you know, acquaintances, people that I see in the community. It's on top of mind for a lot of folks, and I think it's, you know, it's one of those things that's somewhat generational. I think my understanding of privacy as a 34-year-old guy who's grown up with a cell phone and grown up with a Twitter account, you know, I think my understanding of privacy and my expectation of privacy may be a little bit different than, you know, maybe some others. And so I think that there's a generational element to that. But at the end of the day, you know, I believe that if we don't pass this, and if we get to the latter part of this year and we've seen no movement from the Trump administration that they're going to make any changes to Real ID, you know, and then at some point, I think we got to go into special session to fix this thing, because we just absolutely cannot get to January 22nd, I think, is the date of next year, and put Missourians in this, you know, box of inconvenience. I think we just have to get it done. So I'm hopeful that we can.
Talking about a special session makes it sound like you don't think it's going to happen in the regular session.
Well, I hope it does. I mean, I just think if it doesn't, you know, if it gets held up by on principle, or held up just by virtue of how slowly things are moving, I think the only hope after that would be for there to be some sort of extension, which there has been a couple of times previously, but we haven't been given any indication that that's going to happen again. I've had conversations with Senator Blunt and Congresswoman Hartzler on the issue, and they've not really heard of much that would indicate that there's going to be any movement going forward. So you know, I hope we don't get there, but I think it's imperative that we get that done by January next year.
Okay, so there's one more thing I do want to ask you about, which we try to get to know the legislator guests we have on the program, and sometimes we ask about the work they do when they're not making laws. And I know that you've been a youth pastor. You've been also a Christian rock musician. You've traveled around.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
We started doing it just kind of recreationally in high school, and came to about at age 20, I guess, really started doing it effectively full time. In 2005, I signed a record deal with Warner Brothers the same year I got married. So I was on the road about 220 days of the first year I was married, which I do not recommend.
It's not
anyone.
A technique you suggest.
We're 12 years in now, and everything's all right. So, but yeah, it was obviously a really cool way to make a living, and an opportunity that a lot of folks never have. So,
Has it informed your work as a legislator?
You know, it has. I think one thing that being on stage, you know, playing in front of big crowds and small, I think was really, really good for me. And when I was first running for office, and just, you know, not being scared to get up and talk to folks and you know, communicate somewhat clearly, hopefully. But yeah, I mean, I think the really awesome part of traveling was just getting to meet just such a wide array of individuals with different perspectives and different backgrounds. And I think that's something that if you make legislating and if you make politics as much as humanly possible about people and impact on people, then I think you can you end up in a pretty good spot. I think when you make it about other things, you know, what do I need to do to sound good for the next time I get reelected? What bills do I need to introduce? What, you know, how do I vote this way so that I can run for my next statewide office or any of those things? When it becomes about that, I think you can get off track pretty quick. And so, you know, for me, I probably don't have any desire to do anything beyond this, but I think I have a pretty decent perspective of, you know, what I'm doing and its impact on the people that I represent. And so I think the touring and just kind of seeing that before I ever got into this has been helpful for sure.
That's Senator Caleb Rowden. He's a Republican from Columbia. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, you bet. Glad to do it.
And Kyle Palmer, my KCUR colleague, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
State House Blend Missouri is produced by Matt Hodapp. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us in the NPR One app as well. We're on Twitter. I'm at PTS Brian. My friend here, Kyle Palmer, is at KCUR Kyle. State House Blend Kansas is where you can find our friend Sam Zeff. He's at Sam Zeff on Twitter. We're on the air Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. on KCUR. And if you have any other thoughts on the program, shoot me an email, brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.